everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because we're getting ready for Scary Movie Month with a scary movie show. I'm joined for a discussion of the original Dawn of the Dead by the hairiest Krishna I know, JB.
Patrick, I'm going to try not to come back
to Chicago.
I had to get that out of the way right away because I rewatched the movie last night and I reread Jan's column on Scott Reininger's performance. And yeah. I was honestly afraid as we discussed that part that I would start crying because the movie struck me very different last night than it ever has before. So by making a joke at the beginning of the podcast, I can avoid crocodile tears.
Interesting. Now I'm excited to get to that part.
By the way, today's podcast is being brought to you by Liquid Death Severed Lime, you know?
What is Liquid Death? And why are you putting it in your body?
No. It's a mountain spring water.
Oh, all right.
It just has a catchy name. Friend of the site, Mike Piccoli, introduced me to this. And, you know, cost plus world market runs hot and cold on Halloween stuff.
Yeah.
This year, they're leaning into the Liquid Death. They're selling Liquid Death right as you walk in. And it's a bubbly water that has a little lime flavor.
Okay.
And it's delightful. And I'm convinced if perhaps you were an alcoholic, this could maybe wean you away because you could drink this and convince yourself you're drinking an adult beverage.
Okay. All right. I'm into it.
Plus, you got to admit, it's got to be better than Monster.
Are you excited about Scary Movie Month?
Intensely.
Do you have a game plan?
Have you noticed everything Halloween is earlier this year?
Yes.
And Jan and I have been trying to figure out why. I think it's leftover longing from the pandemic. But for decades, the rule was stores had back to school stuff and then it switched to Halloween, but that didn't happen this year. Every place put their Halloween stuff out early, like crazy early compared to previous years.
I found myself not like feeling that excited about it. And then just today, at the day that we're recording this, we put up our Halloween stuff.
Hold on. I have to shout to my wife.
Okay.
Jan.
She's gone, remember?
The Bromleys put up their Halloween stuff today. My wife would like to wait till October 1st.
We put ours up today, and then before you know it, I was like putting Frankenstein on the TV and wearing my Dracula shirt and my pumpkin boxers that Erica just bought me, and I'm all in.
My lovely wife was in Texas last week, and it was all I could do to not go down to the storage closet and set everything up while she was gone. But in retrospect, that might have been a bad idea and would have led to our divorce.
Oh, then don't do that.
So I think we're waiting till October 1st.
Okay.
Speaking of October 1st.
Yes.
TCM Fathom Events on October 1st only is showing a double feature of Bride of Frankenstein and the Mummy. And I'm assuming that's because last year's double feature, which we all attended together,
must
have been popular nationwide. Although I still remember all the really young people who came with us when the screening was over, looked at me and you like, those are the ones you love?
Yeah, my son still is a little bitter about Dracula. He didn't love Dracula, and I think everybody at different times fell asleep during Dracula.
And I'll admit, it's a little slow, but because I love it so much, and it's so rare you see it in a movie theater, I still remember that screening for like how much I got out of it and how much I enjoyed it, trying to ignore everyone else in our party and their snoring.
J-Bones, have you seen anything good lately?
Well, I'll tell you. I know there's some films out there lately that have been dividing audiences and have been very divisive in people's opinions. But because I've avoided those films, it's just been a bounty here I got to see Jaws in IMAX.
Okay.
Which was just terrific. And everyone else in the screening was like really into Jaws, but not to an obnoxious level that like where they were shouting lines or something.
Right.
It was clear it was a very pro Jaws audience who knew how to behave in a public place. So that was amazing. And then I went to a Dr. No Fathom event that was not TCM. It was just Fathom event. And it's delayed and delayed, and we're all sitting in the theater. And because it's not a TCM one, they're not showing all that nonsense before it. And I'm thinking something's wrong. And in the spirit of our own Adam Riske, who's talked about this before, someone in the audience gets up to tell the manager that something's wrong. And a couple minutes later, what appears on the screen, Patrick?
A note DVD sending you player all over. Menu. Oh, there it is.
Oh, really? You know, I have the Blu-ray at home. I'm here because the popcorn's better. So the upside was Dr. No was wonderful to see in a movie theater again, and that was delightful. But these DVD screenings have to go.
Has Adam told you about the drive-in recently that he went to?
Yes.
Where they started streaming HBO Max?
Yes. In fact, that was either a tweet or maybe he sent me a text or maybe okay. both. Yeah. But I was like, brother, I've been there, brother. So thanks to a lot of reviews, but most especially our very own Rob DiCristino's. Two nights ago, I saw Confess Fletch.
Yes. Did you go to the theater to see it or did you watch it at home?
No, here's the problem. I was so looking forward to seeing it in a theater, but I was waiting for said wife to come home from Texas.
Right.
And by the time she did, it was gone.
Oh, no.
Every theater around here, not even one screening once a day, it was gone. So we streamed it, which once again presented us with the Amazon conundrum. $19 to rent or $25 to buy? What's it going to be? You going to watch it one more time in your lifetime?
Yeah.
I love when, you know, I like to see the guys at the conference table. What would be the price point to really make someone crazy trying to decide?
I've struggled with that before, and I think the last time we did it, I ended up buying The Northman, and I just don't see myself watching that movie again, which is ironic. So we went with the rental for Fletch, and I'll totally watch Fletch all the time.
And
we didn't buy it.
I think this is the only case where I made the right decision. I said, based on what I've been told, I'll probably watch this again. I gave him the extra $5, and I have to tell you, and I think you intimated this when we were texting. It's so good in so many different ways. A lot of people have been pointing out how good the mystery actually is and that it could have been lazy about what's actually, you know, keeping you there narrative wise. And I don't know what your feelings are about Chevy Chase, but those movies are really held in high esteem. There are people who really love the Chevy Chase Fletch movies. I thought John Hamm was much better in that he was able to sort of deliver funny lines sideways so that it took you a second to even realize that he was making a joke.
Right.
Whereas when Chevy Chase played him, there was always this underlying, I'm so clever and I'm putting something over on these people.
I've never read a Fletch book.
The Fletch books, but from what I've read, the recent film is much closer to what Jeffrey McDonald intended.
I don't remember Fletch lives all that well, but I just recently rewatched the original Fletch, and it's one of those movies that I don't love. I mean, I like Chevy Chase. It's very much the Chevy Chase show. It's like, look at me in different outfits and playing wacky characters. I don't
and
love
another
it.
Thing, that's another thing the new film got rid of.
Right.
He presents himself as different people, but he doesn't feel the need to dress up. And in fact, when he's talking to the street artists, there's even that funny joke where she asks him to repeat his name and he doesn't remember what he said, which I thought was this film commenting on the other films. Every actor brings it. Just they're so much better than they have any need to be. The performance that I was really taken by was Marcia Gay Harden as the Countess. That could really be a lead balloon. That the conception of that character might not work at all. And I thought she pulled it off because it's really, really funny, the game she's playing. And I still remember I saw her act live.
That's right.
When we went to New York to see God of Carnage, she was in that. And we went to the stage door afterwards to get autographs. And my little bit of fan speech was, I said to her, you're one of my favorite villains in The Mist. And she looked up from signing my autograph and she said, yeah, she was awful. You had a tweet about the female lead,
Lorenza Izzo,
who I was not familiar with. What else has she been in?
She was in, she was married to Eli Roth for a time. So she was in the Knock Knock, obviously, okay, which is what the tweet was kind of about. She's in the Green Inferno. She plays DiCaprio's Italian wife at the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She looks completely, and she really is Italian.
She may have some Italian in her because her name is Italian, but I want to say she's like from Chile.
But in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Confess Fletch, is that a voice she's adopting, or is
yes, that is not her actual accent. Yeah, she's Chilean.
Okay, then we give kudos to both, because there's a scene in Confess Fletch where she and Marcia Gay Harden start yelling at each other in Italian, and it's seamless. It's completely believable. And at one time, I was Italian.
That's right. Who could forget?
I thought Kyle MacLachlan was excellent. Yeah. I thought the actor who played the police inspector,
Roy Wood Jr. from The Daily Show.
Right. That's another example of how this character could have been this cliche that we've seen 100 times. And the character was not that at all.
Yeah.
Including his little assistant, who I thought was
Grizz.
Yeah. It's so much fun. It's like, oh, movies. There were movies that were fun and they were enjoyable to watch all the way through.
It's great. It's I think I texted Adam, like, it's exactly the kind of movie that barely gets made anymore.
And my question is, why is that? Because if there were more movies that made audiences feel like the movie made me feel, wouldn't that make more people want to go to movies? Or is that seen as the exclusive providence of streaming and TV now?
It's a streaming thing. My guess is this pops up on like Paramount Plus in a week or two.
I wish that I had seen it in a theater.
It barely got a theatrical release, as you pointed out. They pulled it within a week.
On my TV, it looked beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, the Italian parts and stuff and it's like taking a vacation parts. But that made me wish I had seen it in a movie theater.
Yeah, Greg Mottola is a good director.
And then the last thing I saw lately, which completely threw me for a loop because I had no expectations, I saw the film Vengeance.
Yes, I saw this too. Okay, so you're knocking out two of mine, which is good.
And Vengeance blew me away, and it shouldn't have, because BJ Novak is a good writer. I thought the strengths of the film were in the writing. And I liked it a lot. It did a lot of things that I really liked. It's the story of someone who finds themselves in Texas for reasons I won't spoil. And Texas winds up not quite being what the character expected. I really liked the Ashton Kutcher character, not only how it's written, but the way he played it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, where else have I seen the brother?
He was in The Predator. Did you see The Predator, the Shane Black one? Yeah, he was like the lead of that movie.
I think I'm confusing him with another actor, though.
And I want to say he played the villain in the first Deadpool, maybe?
Does the actor who played the brother in Vengeance look anything like Timothy Oliphant?
No, I don't think so.
Then I'm confusing him with someone else. So you saw Vengeance.
I saw Vengeance because it started streaming. He's in Logan. He's the villain in Logan, not the villain in Deadpool. I apologize.
Okay, I know I had seen him in something. What did you think of Vengeance? I liked it.
I liked it overall. I kind of wanted to see it when it was out, and it disappeared very quickly, and then it started streaming on Peacock, and so they made it very easy for me to see Vengeance. How could I not watch it when it's basically free because I subscribe to Peacock? I was frustrated with it for a while because I felt like it was doing something that I had seen a bunch of times. And then by the end, it kind of turned those things on its head and was a movie I hadn't seen a bunch of times. Yeah. I thought Ashton Kutcher gave a speech near the end that alone makes the movie worth seeing. His last monologue.
Okay, because his first monologue is really something too, and seduces BJ Novak. Mm-hmm. And I think seduces the audience because we're listening and it's like, well, I've never heard that point made that way. This guy's really smart. The more I thought about it, though, after I watched it, is, are you familiar with the Robert Altman, The Long Goodbye?
Sure.
I thought those two films had a lot in common. Especially the completely passive main character.
Right.
Who does something at the end that surprises us, but it shouldn't. I was wondering if maybe The Long Goodbye, that version of Long Goodbye, was one of Novak's inspirations. Because the more you think about the two of the films, the more they resemble each other.
Yeah. I thought it had a lot to say about the times that we are living in right now.
Ashton Kutcher's speech about things being broken up into smaller pieces and losing their meaning. Mm-hmm. I think it starts with, when's the last time you listened to an album? Mm-hmm. I thought was very thought provoking.
Yeah, it was good. I was surprised that I liked it because for a while I wasn't really liking it.
But in a weird way, when you describe your reaction,
yeah,
I think that's what Novak was going for.
I think you're right.
Because he wanted your reaction to mirror what the protagonist is going through as he described that nothing is what he thought it was going to be. And then even that turned on its head.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right.
Given other things come out this year, I think our listeners should see Vengeance.
Yeah, I would agree
with
that.
I think it's a film from this year that you need to see.
Yeah. I would see Confess Fletch first, and then I would see Vengeance.
Two very different films, though.
Yes, but Confess Fletch is better.
I don't want to resort to apples and oranges.
I do. It's all fruit.
Well, in the words of Stephen Colbert, you can't eat a peanut butter with an orange. That's part of that Colbert questionnaire he asks. In any case, that's what I've seen lately.
Yeah, all right. I've got a couple that I will mention. Vengeance, Confess Fletch. Oh, speaking of Peacock, there is a new romantic comedy on there called Meet Cute, which feels very much like a pandemic movie, which I'm starting to, I don't want to say tire of, but we've gotten a lot of movies lately where it's like two actors, one location. Yeah. That's Meet Cute. It's Kaley Cuoco and Pete Davidson in a bar and on the street in New York. Basically, that's the movie. And
I've read about it, but I haven't seen it. The title bothers me.
Sure. It's a Roger Ebert expression, right? Didn't he invent the term meet cute?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Who invented Manic Pixie Dream Girl?
Nathan Rabin.
That's right. He did. Meet cute is if they came together would have been called New York is Practically a Character.
So it's a romantic comedy with a time travel component.
Oh boy.
So it was reminding me of both. I'm looking up the name of this movie. When We First Met, I think is what it's called, which was a Netflix romantic comedy from 2018 starring Adam Levine.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, it's not really worth seeing. And also Happy Accidents with Vincent D'Onofrio and Hope Davis. Because that's a romantic comedy where he keeps trying to convince her he's from the future.
Right.
Which is sort of the premise of this movie. Kaylee Cuoco finds a tanning bed that allows her to travel back in time for 24 hours. So it's Hot Tub Time Machine also. And she just keeps replaying her first date with Pete Davidson. And I don't want to get into why.
So it's a new take on Groundhog Day?
A little bit, yeah.
I thought you were going to bring up Palm Springs. I am one of those.
That's another one. Jeez, I forgot Palm Springs.
I'm one of those rare individuals who is not a fan of Palm Springs and thought it owed a little bit too much to Groundhog Day.
Yeah. I mean, Palm Springs is a better movie than Cute.
Oh, I thought you were saying Palm Springs is a better movie than Groundhog Day.
No, there's not many movies that are better than Groundhog Day.
I agree. We could argue about Quick Change. I recently introduced someone to Quick Change who had never heard of it.
Yeah, it's really
very
good.
Very satisfying. Very satisfying.
Yeah, that movie's great. Not better than Groundhog Day, but still very good. Meet Cute owes a lot to a lot of other movies, it turns out. But it's fine, and by the end, it kind of means something. It reminded me a little bit of Vengeance, because for a long time in the movie, I was like, oh, this is not really working. The time travel stuff isn't working. I have too many questions about the Kaylee Cuoco character and why she's doing the things that she's doing, like telling him every night that she's a time traveler when it clearly puts him off. It's like, well, why would you keep doing it then?
The fact that you say it goes somewhere actually makes me want to see it.
Yeah.
Because I'm such a fan of movies that go somewhere.
It doesn't go anywhere like great, but it goes somewhere that I was like, oh, this is better than I was giving it credit for being. It's very short. It's probably 75 minutes because it plays that game where during the credits, it starts playing a lot of not bloopers, just stuff they cut out, like alternate takes and
where the director's material. Like, I need to get this in. And where is it streaming?
On Peacock.
Wouldn't you agree? I don't remember anymore what I pay for Peacock.
Okay.
But Peacock's a real good deal, isn't it? That's every time I use it, I'm like, this is a great bargain.
Sure. I don't know how much I use it because there's too many streaming services. So I use all of them a couple times a month.
When I moved, I got rid of some.
Yes.
I dumped some.
Yeah.
And then was instantly sorry because then two things came up, one of which we were going to do a podcast on today. I believe the DVD Blu-ray has been delayed.
For real?
I just found that out today. So that whole Blu-ray arrives in the afternoon thing wouldn't have worked anyway. I could be wrong, but Amazon changed the date. We shall see. We're talking, of course, about Rob Zombie's The Munsters.
Yes, which I think we're going to do as a podcast for our Patreon in October.
And I would love, love, love to do it.
Yeah.
Because even though I'm an Addams Family guy, what I've seen so far of Rob Zombie's The Munsters is that he's doing the TV show. And the people who are like, this is sacrilege, I'm like, do you remember the TV show? But we'll see. Dan Roebuck plays Grandpa, and he's been tirelessly flogging the damn film on Twitter. And they released a 12-inch single of the Zombo theme that Rob Zombie wrote, because Zombo is going to be in this movie. And does anyone remember Zombo? Zombo's my favorite character from the Munsters. Okay. Eddie becomes obsessed with a horror movie host played by Louis Nye named Zombo. And it's my all-time favorite episode of the Munsters, which you can watch on Peacock. I think Peacock with commercials might be free. And then you pay a small amount to not have commercials.
We have become an ad for Peacock.
I don't mean to. It's just, no, it's fine. When I first got Peacock, it was around the fall. And because Peacock is NBC and NBC is Universal, they had all the Universal monster films. They had every episode of Columbo.
Yeah.
That alone.
It's crazy to me that the Munsters isn't going to Peacock and instead is going to Netflix. They also released a 12-inch single of Herman and Lily doing I Got You, Babe. But I'm glad I didn't buy either of those, because just on Friday, as we're recording this, Waxworks released the full Munsters soundtrack on vinyl, which I did order.
I just got that email.
Yeah.
And I might borrow that from you, because I bought the Zombo one and kind of felt ripped off.
Yeah.
The latest offering of this full soundtrack got me interested, because it's very beautiful and it's on colored vinyl. And
yeah,
I have high hopes for Rob Zombie's The Munsters. And those of you who are on the Patreon machine, it is our intent to do a Patreon exclusive podcast about The Munsters in October.
Yeah. So see me cute or don't, it's your fucking life.
Well, what you said it's short.
It is very short. Yeah.
So there you go.
And again, your tolerance for it will largely depend on your tolerance for those two actors.
Kaley Cuoco, I will say this, is very easy on the eyes.
Sure. She's good in the movie. Pete Davidson is good in the movie. A lot of people hate Pete Davidson for some reason. I assume it's because he dates a lot of very famous, very successful, very beautiful women. Whatever. You should do that too, if that's what you're upset about.
I'm interested in what his post SNL career is going to look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so far it's bodies, bodies, bodies.
Yeah.
And meet cute, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Not bad.
So there you go.
I watched a movie last night from a director I like, who hasn't made a movie I've liked in at least 10 years. and that is Stephen C. Miller, who's been sort of stuck in the direct-to-video action dregs, but he made a movie called Margot, not M-A-R-G-O-T, the Kenneth Lonergan movie, M-A-R-G-A-U-X. And it is the first killer smart home movie I've seen.
The first what?
Killer smart home, you know, like if you hooked your smart home up to Alexa. Here the Alexa is named Margot.
Okay.
And Margot wants to kill everyone. It actually reminded me a lot of Death Spa, which we did a Scary Movie Month commentary for.
I remember.
Which is about a smart health spa. It's not good. I can't recommend it. I keep pulling for Stephen C. Miller because he made a really terrific movie called The Aggression Scale. And then he made a decent remake of Silent Night, Deadly Night called Silent Night with Malcolm McDowell and Jamie King. And then has been just making these kind of DTV action movies that I've seen a bunch of and haven't yet liked really. It's clear each time out that, like, he's a good filmmaker. He's stuck with bad material, and Margot is another example of that.
What makes me want to see Margot is that I'm currently experiencing Amazon heroin marketing policy, that they're very upset that I don't buy more stuff. So occasionally they offer me a smart plug. No, not, it's not what you think. For a penny.
Oh, wow.
They're going to give me this damn thing for a penny. And so far, they have given me this offer twice. So I own two smart plugs, and the smart plug allows you to do this if you're as lazy as I am. Alexa, turn on the light.
Okay.
You couldn't hear that, but
no,
in my
no.
bedroom,
I
the
kind of
light,
heard it.
the light just turned on.
Okay.
And this is very handy.
It's good, though. It saves you the trouble of doing this.
Well, hear me out. If you're in bed, you don't want to have to get up and hit the light switch.
Okay.
So basically, it's a high-tech clapper. Remember
yeah,
the clapper?
I
clap
do.
On, clap off. And to paraphrase a line from RoboCop, I'll buy that for a penny. So I hope they keep offering me these penny clappers. And just the other day, Alexa, completely unbidden life, and started talking to me and said, you know, John, I can set all the lights to turn on automatically at dusk. I'm plugged into the internet. I know when the sun goes down. Would you like all the lights to come on automatically when the sun goes down? And I said, you will not talk to me unless I speak first. No, no, not in my house, not in my house, not ever. And there was a long pause, and she said, sorry. Also, Jan discovered, and this is the genius of people who work in computers, if you say, Alexa, turn off the light,
okay,
she will say, okay. If you whisper that, she turns off the light and then whispers, okay.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm of a generation that's still impressed by that.
No, I didn't know that that happened until one night I had to whisper to the Alexa in my daughter's room because she fell asleep listening to Kentucky Woman by the Guess Who on repeat. And because she's the oldest 10-year-old alive. And so I didn't want to wake her up. So I just whispered to turn off, and it whispered back to me, okay.
It's smart.
Yeah.
This makes me want to see Margo.
Don't.
Is Margo short?
It's like an hour 40.
Does Margot kill Kaley Cuoco?
No. Kaley Cuoco, sadly, not in the movie.
Does Kaley Cuoco promise she's going to try not to come back? In any other movie or sitcom?
That would be a great segue into Dawn of the Dead, but I have to talk about going to see Avatar yesterday in IMAX 3D for the first time in 12 years.
Yes, my son...
Erica and Rosie were supposed to come with us. Rosie got sick. Erica jumped on a grenade and said she would stay home with Rosie because she knows I've been waiting 12 years to see Avatar in IMAX 3D. So I took Charlie and two of his friends. And it's still Avatar. So if you don't like Avatar, it's not going to make you like Avatar. But as somebody who likes Avatar, it was great to see
IMAX 3D. But how did the re-release look? How
it
did the
amazing.
Re-release look?
Yeah, it looked
so
great.
It looked as amazing as it did 12 years ago.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I got home and Erica was watching it at home, so I ended up seeing it twice in a row. But it was good because I could
go ahead.
I could confirm the one little addition
that the theatrical version had.
Correct. The re-release adds back in Giovanni Ribisi on his way out, turns to the main character and says, you know, this isn't over. Cue the sequel.
Again, this makes me sad that I moved because of my antipathy towards Avatar. I could have watched Rosie, but let's not... cry over spilled milk.
Right.
A spilled blue milk. No, wait, that's not how it works.
Now we can talk about Dawn of the Dead.
And speaking of amazing theatrical screenings and Dawn of the Dead, please remember
right.
that somewhere around Halloween, Fathom Events or some other company is going to show Dawn of the Dead, which I guess had been transferred to 3D earlier.
Yeah.
Because someone responded to when I went to see Jaws, they showed the trailer for Dawn of the Dead and I was like, holy shit. But apparently the 3D transfer was done a while back because it was shown at Italy, festival.
Maybe? Yeah, I think it was in Italy.
Oh, okay. I thought it was either Fantastic Fest or Beyond Fest.
Maybe Beyond Fest. I don't think Fantastic Fest.
Beyond Fest starts in a couple days, and I tried to help my son get tickets to it because, of course, it's held here. So he is going to a Park Chan-wook triple feature to herald his new film. And
Right.
although we got shut out for tickets, they're showing Mad Max at IMAX headquarters. So do you think the projection standards are high at IMAX headquarters? He's actually seen a film there before. And then Jan and I snagged tickets to a William Shatner triple feature,
Yeah.
and he's going to be there in attendance.
And what are the three movies?
Well, I'm going to try and remember. Kingdom
Okay.
of the Spiders.
Right. Devil's Reign?
Oh, Devil's Reign.
Yeah.
And Incubus,
Right.
that Canadian film.
Esperanto.
And they've done a restoration. They've
Okay.
done a thing. So that's going to be 6 or 7 hours at the Shat. Who was on The Masked Singer the other night?
Oh. Isn't he like almost 90?
He's 91.
He's 91, shit.
And it was very hot in the costume. He sort of spoke, sang. We all know how William Shatner speaks, sings. He
Picture
spoke, sang his
yourself
way
on a boat,
through
on a river.
putting on the Ritz, and he was the first one to get voted out. I tuned in because for some reason they gave Eric Idle permission to spoil it. Eric Idle was on that episode. And to herald it, he wrote a long article for the New York Times about how he beat cancer.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
He's very, very lucky. And he was on the show as the hedgehog, and he sang Love Me Do. And the producer said that might be a problem. And Eric Idle said, well, I'll send Paul a note. And Paul gave him permission to sing Love Me Do, but only if Eric would let him know ahead of time when it would be on so Paul could miss it. That was Idle's joke.
Yeah.
But the article, it was either in the New Yorker or the New York Times or New Magazine, I forget which. It's a lengthy article about his battle with cancer because he had prostate cancer. And if any of our listeners are interested, it's worth finding on the internet because it's quite amazing.
Beyond Fest has a lot of stuff that I really wanted to see.
Well, I got one ticket to the Weird Al movie, but only one. So what, I'm going to go by myself?
Yes.
The
Because otherwise,
director's
you have to
going to.
watch it on the Roku channel like me.
But here's, you can answer this question for me, and we're testing the patience of the podcast listeners. Is the Roku channel free?
If you have a Roku, I think.
So on my Samsung Smart TV or
Yeah.
my Apple TV, I cannot get the Roku channel.
You might be able to. I've never tried.
Like as an app.
Right. I've never tried, but you may very well be able to. Somebody listening may be able to tell us.
What makes this screening enticing is that not only is the director going to be there in person, I meant to get two tickets so that I could go with my lovely wife, but I screwed up. But it's a double feature. They're going to show Weird and then have a Q&A with the director, and then they're going to show UHF.
Well, that's a terrific night at the movies, and you should go.
Okay, I've got 6 days to decide.
All right. But back to Dawn of the Dead.
Yes.
Dawn of the Dead weirdly isn't just one of my favorite horror movies ever made. I think it crosses over to be just like one of my favorite movies ever made.
Which I can understand, especially given my most recent screening.
Yeah.
And every time this movie comes up, I try to figure this out because this was a long ass time ago. When the film was released, it was released unrated. So they didn't let anyone in. I think it was 17, maybe it was 18. I don't remember.
17.
At the During the end credits, Ike Barinholtz is thanked. And I have to think that's because Ike, no, I'm sorry.
Like not the comedian, not the, Ike Barinholtz?
Not the stand-up comedian. No, I'm sorry. I'm in a magical, mystical dreamland. Ben Barinholtz.
Okay.
Who was a movie distributor. And he was responsible for the success of Eraserhead. And I have to think he either gave Romero and company some advice or had something to do with the release. I don't know, because he was a producer. So the film comes out in 78, correct?
Yep.
And according to the poster on your wall, you have to be 17.
Yeah.
I was 16.
Okay.
And they let me in.
Huh.
Is it because at 16, I had a mustache?
Probably. And because you were standing on the shoulders of a friend, and with both of you were wearing one long overcoat.
Okay. Actually, I still remember the friend.
One for Dawn of the Dead, please.
I still remember the friend I saw it with. He's a good guy. But that movie opened my eyes, because as a 16-year-old, I had never seen anything like that. What was interesting about my screening last night was that when I think about Dawn of the Dead, I think about certain things. The gore scenes, of course, the thing at the end with the bikers that sort of played for laughs, although it's black humor. But maybe it has more to do with my mood lately or something. But last night when I watched it, I was really struck by ultimately how sad and tragic the movie is.
Yeah.
And that all that other stuff seems to be designed to not so much to make it commercial, but to sort of, I don't know, to distract us from what is basically a pretty grim journey. And a couple weeks ago, TCM Underground showed Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
I was really surprised by it. TCM's been showing some crazy stuff lately. It's like, we don't pay attention to ratings anymore. And obviously this was on really, really late. And I hadn't seen Day of the Dead in a really long time. And it was great to see a beautiful print with no commercials. So I watched it. And you could say the same thing about Day of the Dead, although I think Day of the Dead is a little bit... Day of the Dead is a little bit less concerned that you're going to figure that out earlier. Dawn of the Dead really sort of disguises what it's really about for the first two thirds, I think.
Well, I think Day of the Dead, I mean, I guess it's true of Night of the Living Dead too. All of the, you know, of the dead movies are grim, obviously, because they're apocalyptic movies.
Very grim.
But I do think that Dawn of the Dead, maybe more than the other two, and I think this is why I respond to Dawn of the Dead the most, is because I think at the point that Romero made Dawn of the Dead, he was still a humanist. I think...
I understand what you're saying completely.
He gets credit for, like Carpenter, being a real cynic.
Yeah.
And I could understand why, and there's a lot of cynicism in all the movies, especially Day of the Dead, and maybe because that one came last in the cycle, that's the one that people remember the best.
It's hard, though, to think of anything much more cynical than the shots in Dawn of the Dead of the zombies walking through the mall with that sort of happy talk music playing. And the longer those shots go on, the more you start to think, well, that doesn't look any different than my mall on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, it's sort of clear. And I remember in one of the many documentaries where Romero talked about Dawn of the Dead, he said, you know, the zombies are there, they're in the mall, but something's wrong. It's not just doing it. It's not doing it for them anymore. And they have everything they need for the fine life, but somehow something's missing, which, I mean, he was making a joke about the zombies, but I think you can say the same thing about our four human characters. Is there any place sadder than that apartment they set up?
Right.
That looks like any young married couple's apartment in the early 80s with, you know, but why is it so sad?
It's interesting because I think the first time I saw Dawn of the Dead, I would have been in like eighth grade or maybe a freshman in high school.
Oh, wow. That's
and
a
I
lot
saw
younger
it
than me.
Because somebody for Christmas had bought me Roger Ebert's Video Home Companion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going through it and I see that there's a horror movie that he has given 4 stars. And it's like a 4-star movie that I get to check off and it's a horror movie. How can I see
and
this
because
as quickly
horror,
as possible?
Horror was not Roger's jam.
No. So I checked it out from my local library and did not know what to make of it for a lot of reasons. And I'm going to try not to do this, although I know he listens. But our friend Doug, for years, has argued with me about Dawn of the Dead. Because he's just like, the blood is orange and there's a zombie pie fight. And why do you like this movie? And he himself has admitted that even though he doesn't really like it, he feels compelled to revisit it like once a year.
Because he really loves Night.
Yes. And he really loves the remake, the Zack Snyder 2004 remake. But yeah, Night of the Living Dead is like his favorite horror movie ever made. And can't get into Dawn of the Dead. And I think when I talked to Doug about it, the place that he's at with it, or at least was the last time we talked about it and could easily have changed by now, is where I was on that first viewing, where it's like, what the hell is this? I don't know what to make of this. I'm shocked by the gore, but there's all this broad comedy and there's this goblin music that sounds like it wants to be from the A-Team. You know, Romero made a lot of this movie to be like a big splashy comic book movie. And so the vibe is weird because for years we've been told that this is medicine because it's satire.
Yeah.
It's consumerism, man. And
the one line that everyone on Earth quotes, I will say this, on the second sight 4K, the blood is not orange anymore.
Interesting. But the zombies are still blue.
Which I really like, but
I do too, but
again, I watched it last night and the blood is very bright red. It's red.
Okay.
You couldn't mistake it for any other color.
Okay.
I agree the pie fight is more problematic, but I think there's reasons for that.
Oh, I do too. I don't even think it's problematic. I mean, I said that, you know, Romero at the time that he made this is something of a humanist, but I also think he's making the point, and it's the point that's been made over and over again in zombie movies, in particular in The Walking Dead, which owes everything to Romero, which is like, hey, people are the worst.
Exactly, because if there's one thing that binds the three first, the original zombie trilogy.
Right, which is
together.
Kind of the ones we're going to be talking about. When we talk about the trilogy, we're not really talking about that second group of three.
The point that he hammers home more than any other point is, if the human beings could just take a deep breath and communicate and cooperate,
right,
this wouldn't be that big of a problem. I also think, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, the pie fight seems designed to really make you feel sorry for the zombies.
Sure.
I mean, it's not bad enough. And up until then, they're really seen as a threat. But Romero sort of pulls off an interesting trick there. that we think the zombies are this big threat and we certainly don't want to get bitten. But the minute the pie fight motorcycle gang part starts, we instantly hate the motorcycle gang much more than the zombies.
Right. Right. Which is a thing that he does not so much in Night, but he definitely does it in Day, which you said you just rewatched.
Yeah.
Where the soldiers are worse than the zombies, and some of the scientists are worse than the zombies, because of when we go into that lab and we see the experiments that he's running, we're like, oh, this is kind of awful.
Yeah. And then when we find out that the one scientist has all these daddy issues and
right.
he's channeling them, it's like, oh my God.
Are you a Day of the Dead fan?
You mean the Romero's third zombie film?
Correct.
Not the, oh, okay. Yes, very much I am.
Okay.
When I watched it on TCM a couple weeks ago, I was surprised. I finally figured out that Bub is played by Howard Sherman.
Yeah.
Who was Elaine's triangle artist boyfriend who gets the junior mint sewn up inside of him on Seinfeld.
Right.
That's range, Patrick.
Sure.
That's range. But I recognize him. He has a very distinctive head.
Yeah. There's, you know, one of the things that I love so much about Dawn of the Dead is that you really kind of go through a range of emotions in the movie. It's not just playing this one note over and over again, even if it's playing it very, very well. Which is great when a horror movie can do that. You know, I think of something like The Descent puts you through the ringer. But I don't go back to it that often because it plays one note incredibly well. It does more than one note. It's reductive to say that movie only plays one note, but the note that it plays really well is putting you through the ringer and terrifying you. And so I don't go back to it that often. Whereas Dawn of the Dead does all these different things really, really well. And you had just mentioned, you know, it stops making the zombies feel like a threat at a certain point because the motorcycle gang is so much worse. And what's so great about Romero is that then minutes later, he's like, oh no, the zombies are a threat. Look what they do to the motorcycle gang.
At no point am I suggesting that Dawn of the Dead is a Bollywood film. But my point of comparison is that if you have seen a Bollywood film, it's truly an evening of entertainment.
Right.
Because there'll be 20 right, minutes right. of a love story, and then it'll be a musical for a while. And then for the next hour, it's a vengeance drama where someone's trying to get revenge. I actually really admire that about Bollywood films. And Dawn of the Dead is an evening's entertainment. Mm-hmm. Think of another film from the 80s where the scary stuff is really scary. The gory stuff is groundbreaking. The comedy relief is both funny and disturbing. It's also a social satire. It's also a human drama that's almost like a bottle episode of a TV show
right.
between the four of them in the apartment. It's a total evening of entertainment, Patrick.
The scene that I was thinking of when I was like thinking about how the movie kind of jumps around and does all these different things. And I definitely talked about it before, either on the podcast or I've written stuff about it or who knows, because Dawn of the Dead has come up a lot, you know, in the 12 years that we've been doing this movie.
And we were surprised we had never done a podcast.
Yeah.
Because we had certainly talked about it on other podcasts and written columns about it.
Right. And there's these two moments. And as I was watching it yesterday, I was like, oh no, is it not? Are these moments not going to be in the movie? Was I watching a different cut? Because there's famously all these different cuts of Dawn of the Dead.
And last night I had to decide which one to watch.
Which one did you go with?
Theatrical.
As did I. But I was starting to think, oh, are these two moments that I'm thinking of in the extended cut? And I foolishly went with the theatrical, but I went with the theatrical and they are in the movie. They're just later than I thought.
And what are the two moments?
So the first, my memory was Ken Foray and Roger, but it's not. It's Ken Foray and David.
Okay.
Steven, sorry.
Steven.
David is the actor's name. Steven.
Yes.
It's when they go into the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I know exactly what you're going to say.
I love it so much because Romero has them walk through the velvet ropes. And it's this great.
You want to follow, that, especially after they've stolen a bunch
right.
of money.
Right. They're but the only ones there.
Follow the corral.
It's just this great comment on what slaves to habit or
norms.
Rules. Right. Norms. We are. And then the second moment comes around the same time in the film, and it's when Ken Foray, whose name is Peter,
yes,
is playing like handball on the roof of the mall, and the ball.
Right, which you've talked about this moment before.
Yeah, because it works every time. Because you get so wrapped up in just the human drama of the four, although I think it's three at that point, survivors. And then the ball bounces off the roof and into the parking lot, which is swarmed with zombies who you've kind of forgotten about for a little while because the movie has gotten away from being a zombie movie.
And visually, it's a beautiful way of, oh, Ken is playing handball. Bump, bump. I mean, literally follow the bouncing ball down to the reality. One moment that struck me last night was Peter realizes it's very important to block off and hide their entrance to the little hidden place. And there's a scene where, and I guess they have all the stuff because there's a hardware store. He actually builds a fake wall out of lumber and drywall and paints it to look like the rest of the hallway. And I'm sitting there saying, that looks, I mean, they're doing montage, but that looks like that would actually take a pretty long time to do. And then, spoiler alert, later in the film, the zombies knock it down in 20 seconds, like it's a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
It's like, if you want a little example of the folly of human endeavor, that fake wall is it.
Well, and the reason that that happens is because at this point, again, spoilers, but we're talking about a movie that came out in 1978. Steven has become a zombie and remembers exactly where their little hideout is.
And over there on the shelf, I have a little action figure of Flyboy as a zombie. And I have to say the actor, David Emge or MG?
I think it's MG.
David MG is one of the most distinctive zombies in movies. I mean, mm-hmm. not just the makeup that they do because he's been bitten in several places, but his entire affect as he leaves the elevator and he's still holding the gun, mm-hmm. although he no longer knows how to use it and his leg is virtually useless. It's really something amazing and something that he obviously spent some time on because it's very disturbing.
Especially, I kept wondering if that's why he got cast, because he's so good at playing the zombie. Not that he's bad as...
But that was his audition.
Yeah, like, not that he's bad in the rest of the movie, but he's so good at doing the zombie that part of me is like, oh, that's why they cast him. But that's not why. That's crazy.
The four leads are very well cast. The other reason why I made that
by
joke...
Who? By who? Who cast them?
I know this. John Amplis.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
And he shows up early in the film with this crazy dark skin makeup and a beard that's obviously fake. He gets shot very early in the film. He's an extra.
There's some questionable wigs throughout the movie because that wig pops up later when the motorcycle gang shows up and you're like, hey, that guy's wearing the John Amplis wig.
Oh, speaking of wigs, here's another thing I noticed that I'm not sure if I've ever noticed before because I think it's been a while since I've seen it. Whoever did continuity, or maybe this was Romero, or maybe this was someone else, really did a good job of keeping track of the zombies in the mall. Mm-hmm. Because at the very end of the film, spoiler alert, as all the zombies are trying to go up the ladder, we see two that we remember from very early in the film. One of them's a nurse.
Yeah.
The nurse keeps showing up.
Yeah.
And it's a very distinctive costume and everything, and so we remember it. But that through all this mayhem, there seems to be the subtle point being made that, you know, the zombies just keep coming. And look at this one. She's made it through quite a few little conflagrations. And then there's one, I call him Dad. He's this middle-aged guy wearing a sweater. Okay. And we've seen him at the beginning of the film, yeah, too. And he shows up with the nurse. And whoever was doing zombie continuity did a great job, because it's like, oh, someone actually paid attention and was keeping track of this.
I love all the memorable zombies, because in Night of the Living Dead doesn't really have them as much. And in Night of the Living Dead, it's more like people who literally crawled out of a grave. Whereas here, and they're wearing clothes that they wore to work. Or
one of my favorite zombies, one of my favorite zombies in Night of the Living Dead is the woman in a white dress who eats a bug off the tree. And I was very personally gratified when that original crazy Laserdisc came out that everyone still screams about, that had the audio commentary with the cast.
Yeah.
That's Marilyn Eastman, who plays Mrs. Cooper, doubling as a zombie.
Right.
So she's in the film twice, because, you know, when you're on a low budget, people
gotta
have
get your
to
money's
do,
worth.
People have to do double duty.
Is
also,
this
when
the
I was,
first? Oh, sorry.
When I was watching it last night, I kept thinking, you know, at the Monroeville Mall, they now have a bust of Romero and a plaque that explains this famous film was filmed here. That as I'm watching the film, through a lot of the scenes, I was wondering just how hard it was to film that in one night, because they'd have to put the mall back
where
it was, and that how it was planned out so that, for instance, all that motorcycle stuff, those are real motorcycles running through the mall.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to do it very quickly or organize it so it was broken up into different nights. And just how hard was it some nights to get the mall back? Because I remember Romero saying they didn't just have to have it done for the store's opening. It was one of those malls where old people would come to walk.
Right.
So I think we might need a fictional film a la the one about The Room.
Oh, yeah. The Disaster Artist.
Yes. About the filming of Dawn of the Dead. We need that movie.
Joe Hill wrote a short story. Hold on, I'm looking it up. Because it's in one of his... It's called Bobby Conroy Comes Back from the Dead. And it's in 20th Century Ghosts, I want to say. Yeah. And it's set during the making of Dawn of the Dead.
And you've read it?
Yeah.
And you would recommend it?
It's great. I mean, 20th Century Ghosts is a great short story compilation. But yeah, Bobby Conroy Comes Back from the Dead is great.
Wouldn't you go to see a film where actors, where that whole thing was recreated, and you can film it at the Monroeville Mall, and they would welcome you with open arms?
I went to the Monroeville Mall just to walk through it. I didn't find the bust of Romero, but a couple of years ago, we went to Pennsylvania, and then we stopped in Philadelphia to see Rob, and I asked if on the way home we could stop in at the Monroeville Mall, and Erica was kind enough to pull up and let me just walk through it real quick and pay tribute.
And I've been there once when I was in Pittsburgh for
a convention, I'm assuming.
The one where we did the podcast-a-thon.
Oh,
I can't remember the name of the convention.
They've all run together for me, but I remember you being there, yeah.
Monster fun for John.
Is this the first instance of the characters referring to them as zombies?
In a Romero film?
Yeah.
I'm thinking yes.
Okay. Because Peter calls them zombies at one point. And in Night of the Living Dead, even Romero has said...
When they were making Night of the Living Dead, I think the term they... I should know from the movie because I've seen the movie so many times, but when they were making Night of the Living Dead, the crew and cast preferred ghouls.
Right. Romero has said a bunch of times, we just called them ghouls. We weren't even calling them zombies, even though they invented what we now call zombies. Yeah.
Considering how different from White Zombie Night of the Living Dead is, I think we can give that distinction to Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah. or even the Val Luton zombies.
Well, and speaking of Night of the Living Dead, that comes out in a couple weeks, 4K from Criterion.
I will not be upgrading.
Well, I don't see how much better it can look because that Blu-ray is just... But do I think it's outstanding? Because for a while it was in the public domain.
Right.
And man, there were some. In fact, there was a streaming service that was showing Night of the Living Dead, and it was the shitty. It was a shitty one. It wasn't the good transfer that Laserdisc pioneered.
You said it played very differently for you this time. What do you mean?
That
it was sad.
Yes.
Okay.
That the comic relief was more obvious to me as a way of painting a smile on something that was tragic. If anything, Jan pointed this out, that maybe it was because Romero and so many of the crew worked in TV, that opening scene in the TV station seems really realistic to how that would have played out, that it has the sort of verisimilitude of truth. But again, as better minds than mine have pointed out, I think it might have been R.H.W. Dillard in his essay on Night of the Living Dead, that in all three films, we start with a situation that's hopeless, and then it just gets worse.
Right.
And that's rare for American films, I think. That's a rare narrative choice. Although, you know, maybe if you actually sat down and looked at enough horror films, you'd say, well, no, in the horror genre, it's pretty popular. Kurt Vonnegut used to get great acclaim when he would speak, when he would do live appearances, that he had submitted a proposal for a PhD where he would map the narrative arc of famous stories of a culture and compare the picture. And the picture was on an X and Y axis of good fortune and bad fortune. So you would look at the Cinderella story, and she's pretty low because she's being forced to scrub the floors. But then the fairy godmother shows up, and she gets a dress and a coach, and she gets to go to the ball. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
And then the clock strikes midnight, and she goes to much worse fortune because obviously before all this happened, she didn't even have the chance that something nice would happen. But then, of course, the prince finds the glass slipper, and he puts it on her foot, and she goes on to infinite happiness, and that's what that story looks like. And then he plots the story of Kafka's The Metamorphosis. Gregor Samsa is in a bad place. And then one morning he wakes up and he's a bug. Boom! Down to infinite unhappiness. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, that's the narrative arc of the three Romero Dead films. That we start in a place that's not particularly good.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara and her brother are bickering. And from there it gets worse. And then that television station at the beginning of Dawn of the Dead is just bedlam. I like how, as it goes on, and I'm sure this was Romero's influence because he worked at the TV station, as the movie goes on, the camera work at the TV station gets worse and worse because people start bailing and people who don't know. Oh, that's a great touch.
I get why Day of the Dead puts so many people off, because it's very unpleasant. Because it's claustrophobic, and we've been run underground in the military, and Joe Pilato's performance is so shrill and over the top. And I think, and I said this recently, I think on our Patreon episode, because we had done a top five part threes and I named Day of the Dead.
Part three.
I think all of them, Day of the Dead has kind of dated the best, because I think the country has caught up with where Day of the Dead is, sort of. Whereas Night and Dawn, I feel like, are pretty timeless.
When I watched Day on TCM the other night, I thought it had a lot to say about bullying, because the military force quickly becomes just unforgivable bullies about everything. And the other thing I liked about that recent screening was that even though it didn't hit you over the head with it, the entire film had this theme of, are the scientists there to do the bidding of the military, or is the military there to protect the scientists while they try to solve the problem?
Right.
And that's the debate that fuels the drama of the film.
Right.
You would like to think that as human beings, we want to see other human beings survive and get out of a bad situation. You would think the military is there to facilitate the scientists. But as American history has shown us, that's not always the case.
Well, and Dawn of the Dead is interesting because it takes these four characters who don't really... Each pair sort of knows each other.
Right.
Right. Peter and Roger sort of know each other. And then I keep blanking on their names. Stephen and Galen Ross know each
Francine.
Other. Francine, sorry. But it puts them together and then has them coexist pretty happily, which doesn't take place in Night of the Living Dead, doesn't take place in Day of the Dead.
No.
But if not for the bikers overrunning the mall, that they could have, you know, lived out their days there.
Right. And or we would have had the ending that we have with more people in the helicopter.
Right. Exactly. And you've read about the original ending for the movie, right?
I'm not sure. When I was watching the Second Sight 4K last night, I had the same reaction that you did. That because something was taking so long to happen, I wondered if A, I misremembered it, or B, I was thinking of another cut of the film.
Well, they didn't shoot this, so this isn't a version that you ever saw, but originally Peter was going to kill himself like he plans to do before he changes his mind at the end of the film.
And that's what I'm talking about. Watching it last night, that took so long.
Yeah.
I was sitting there thinking, did I misremember that he gets on the helicopter? It really looked like Romero was going there.
Yeah. And he was meant to, and Francine was going to kill herself by jumping into the helicopter blades.
Jesus.
Yeah. Which is dark. And they did some tests. So some photos exist, I think, of like the bust of Galen Ross that they made that they were going to send up into the helicopter blades, which, of course, they sort of foreshadow with the Frankenstein zombie with the giant forehead because part of it needs to come off. But obviously they thought better of it. I really like the ending. Again, I wouldn't call it optimistic.
It's the same ending
as Day of the Dead, basically, which is we're going to get into this and fly away.
If anything, the ending that we have is more thought-provoking because it is open-ended.
Right.
As devastating as the ending that you're talking about is, it is final.
Right. I love the way Ken Foray delivers. I can't even do it. How much fuel do we have? Not much. And the way he says, all right, that's the last line in the movie, is great.
His performance is so great. Doesn't he end up the father on Kenan and Kel?
I never watched Kenan and Kel, but I think that's what you've told me before.
Right, because he's done conventions. And, of course, at everyone's table, there's like a list of what they've done.
Yeah.
And Ken Foray's is so odd. From Beyond, Dawn of the Dead, Kenan and Kel.
Well, and then he gets picked up.
He was on another Nickelodeon show, too. So
he gets picked up into Rob Zombie's like rep company, and he makes a bunch of movies with Rob Zombie because he's in The Devil's Rejects, and he's in Halloween, and he's in Lords of Salem. He's one of the DJs in Lords of Salem. So he has become, you know, kind of this icon in horror. But his is, I know Jan wrote an amazing piece about
which I reread right before we did the podcast.
Okay.
And it reminded me of how well my wife writes.
Yes. about Scott, is it Reiniger?
That's how I pronounce
okay.
it.
Okay. About his performance in Dawn of the Dead and how he's her favorite. But Ken Foray, I have to say, is my favorite character and performance in the movie.
A couple years ago, wasn't, and maybe it was more than a couple, wasn't Scott Reiniger a guest once at Flashback?
Yeah.
And in retrospect, I so wish I had been aware, or maybe, I don't know, maybe that's a Flashback I didn't go to, but I would really like to have gone to his table and have a brief discussion with him. Because every time I watch the film, and part of it is because of Jan's article, I think what he brings to the film is exactly what the script wants that character to be.
Mm-hmm.
That he has this youthful energy. Jan says that if the four of them are a family, he's the brother.
Right.
He's the right. High-spirited brother. But during the scene where they're taking the trucks and putting them in front of the entrance, and I just thought this was because I'm getting old and I'm not 16 at the Woodfield One anymore, that when I was watching it last night, I was becoming angry at his behavior and was sort of agreeing with Ken Foray.
Mm-hmm.
You want to settle down a little bit?
Right.
This isn't a game. And of course the entire scene where he comes back, between the performance and the makeup and the way Romero chooses to shoot that, pardon the pun, just magnificent. It's a highlight of an already great film.
It's a movie that, like, you know, we talk about the idea of movies being perfect, and you can kind of count on one or maybe two hands. Like, these are movies I think are perfect. And I think Dawn of the Dead is proof that a movie doesn't have to be perfect in order to be perfect.
Well, but by perfect, do you mean, the only quibble I have with Dawn of the Dead is that parts of it don't date very well.
Sure.
But that's not the film's fault.
Right.
Another pleasure that I got out of watching it last night is that because I grew up with Woodfield Mall, which is the one that's closest to us, I was admiring all the stores in Dawn of the Dead that were also in Woodfield, like Merry-Go-Round.
Right.
And I was sad that we never got a Brown Derby Steakery and Love Pub. They show that a lot in the background.
They
That's
do.
The visual anchor of the film.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also made my wife laugh. Here's something all of you can do. This is going to be an F this movie. Play along with the film. The first time the helicopter catches sight of the mall, and the first time Romero shows the mall, I turned to my wife and I said, "There's a sale at Penny's from Airplane." So I'm advising all of our listeners to do that when they watch the film, because it's fun, because the next hour and a half is going to be pretty grim. You got to find your laughs when you find them.
I remember being very put off by the gore when I saw this movie in like eighth grade. Not put off, but just like, when, oh my God, I've never seen anything like that.
Exactly. And in 1978, when I saw it, no one had ever, I mean, it was just, it was like when The Thing came out. It was
right.
that
right.
sort of leap. The Frankenstein zombie didn't bother me as much last night, because even though you can argue, well, that kind of gives away the gag, almost the next shot is Scott Reiniger, and his forehead isn't that much lower. It's pretty close. They come on. Savini did a good job. And especially in 78, no one had any idea that they were going to go there.
Sure.
So you weren't predisposed to see it. There's
well,
a bunch
now
of,
it doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't faze me, but I watch it now and I'm like, again, they do gnarlier shit than this on AMC.
Yeah. The only gore effect last night that I thought seemed a little forced was the blood pressure machine. That seemed
a
little
gag, you know?
a little too clever by half.
It's just, I mean, now I feel like we're basically talking about the one biker who gets ripped open.
Yeah.
Because everything else feels almost tame, which isn't to say that it has lost its power, because the zombie biting into the shoulder of his wife or girlfriend in that opening sequence will never lose its power, because it's so
it's
crazy.
It's really well done. The
yes.
biker getting ripped open, I thought, was just the logical continuation of the stuff in Night of the Living Dead that showed the zombies with the entrails.
Right.
It's the next logical step. Well,
and then we take the next logical step in Day of the Dead,
which is Joe Pilato,
when we pull Joe Pilato in half.
And he memorably yells, choke on them.
Right.
Because that's the way you want to go out.
Yelling choke on him?
Well, it's his version of not going gentle into that good night.
Right, right. I love Dawn of the Dead so much.
As do I.
Yeah. And I don't know that I'm going to go see the 3D version, mostly because I don't know that I'll have opportunity to. It's not playing very close here. I'd have to travel pretty far.
What's the closest where you are?
I think Wheaton.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And in that case, I'm lucky because it's a town called Camarillo and it's not that far.
Okay.
And that's one of the highlights of this October. Yeah. I really want to see it.
I've never seen it theatrically at all. And I don't know if the only theatrical version I want to have is this 3D post conversion.
That was my quibble with the 3D Jaws. Risky liked it. I wasn't sure. So I didn't go to that. I went to IMAX.
Because it's very hard to see theatrically because of Richard Rubenstein, right?
Oh, yes. And the reason why a lot of people who bought the 4K can't play the bonus disc, because you have to have a region-free player.
Right. And I foolishly just bought the Blu-ray because at that point I didn't have a 4K player. So I don't have the 4K.
So you show it on your region-free Blu-ray player?
Correct.
Okay. The 4K looks really good.
I'm sure.
But again, it's been a long time since I've seen it in any format. So don't go by my justification. The other night I watched something in 4K for the first time. And I'm discovering that those 4K transfers vary wildly. There's some that knock your socks off, but there's some where I would be hard pressed to be able to tell the 4K from the Blu-ray if you A and B'd them to me.
Which is why I'm not upgrading most things. Some like maybe Criterion stuff. And
yeah, some things, it's like they just announced National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. I don't need that to be in higher. what is to be gained?
I'm upgrading Toby Hooper stuff, and you and I were texting about the price point on Poltergeist, but
yes.
I was watching it today and it's pretty amazing. It looks really, really great.
Oh, so that's out already?
Yeah. Well, mine came. I don't know if it's out, but
okay. And that's the 4K.
Yeah.
And maybe by waiting a little while, the price will go down.
By
I don't
Christmas,
know.
You may hit a sale.
I don't know why suddenly I'm cheap, but
no, you're not wrong.
I've got a price point in my head and I want them to hit it. Also, in my new digs, I have found a close Barnes & Noble for the two Criterion sales every year.
Oh,
I've
nice.
Discovered where the Barnes & Noble is.
Good deal. All right, should we wrap it up? I didn't know if there was anything else you wanted to say about Dawn of the Dead.
I think we've said it all.
Okay, good. That was my goal, was to say everything about it. It's taking up some real estate in my basement. It's the poster right behind where JB sits when he comes over.
I feel like going over and getting the two action figures. It's the zombie, the really gross zombie in the red plaid shirt when they stop for gas.
Yeah.
And it's David MG.
Okay.
But I could show them to you, but it's not like the listeners would see them.
No, they wouldn't. No.
They exist. They're very nice. It's a scale that isn't used very often.
Okay. So go to fthismovie.com all the time. We got Scary Movie Month coming up. We got the Scary Movie Challenge coming up, where everybody writes their 7-word reviews and we read them on the show because we have some cool shit coming up for Scary Movie Month.
My column is back.
Yeah.
JV's
writing a column.
I've got some interesting things planned for October.
I'm excited. We have a Patreon, as we mentioned earlier. If you go to patreon.com/fthismovie, you can get some exclusive stuff, including our upcoming Patreon exclusive show, as we teased, on the Munsters. And we're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube, where reserved seating lives. And you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Get ready for Scary Movie Month, everybody.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.